Dem Bash, I'm Sarah Glynn for Media News, and this is my weekly news review for Saturday, the 10th of February. Broken lives and broken promises between earthquakes and elections. The anniversary on Tuesday of last year's devastating earthquakes in Turkey and Syria has generated a plethora of reports on the current situation. They make predictably grim reading. Turkey's official death toll was 53,537, and with the Turkish government clearly culpable for the scale of the casualties, both through lack of preparedness and overriding of regulations, and through a response that prioritised partisan politics over efficiency, it would have been naive to expect a balanced and equitable recovery. Although Turkey's general and presidential elections were held little more than 3 months after the earthquake exposed the devastating depths of government corruption, the opposition alliance failed to overcome government propaganda and media control to persuade voters that they would be any better. So the same people are still in charge. In their summary of the situation 1 year on, the Union of Chambers of Turkish Engineers and Architects comments, quote, "The government sees the whole country as a field of profit and gives it away to 3 or 5 construction companies." And they conclude, "As long as the system works the same way, new criminals will be produced to replace the few that have been punished. The main thing is that there is a chain of responsibility here, and it extends to the highest level of society." End quote. The situation is compounded by a lack of transparency. Uzgur Karabat, the deputy chair of the main opposition Republican People's Party, the CHP, has pointed out major discrepancies between the spending figures given by different government ministers. He's also accused the government of diverting money collected in aid and taxes that were supposed to help the earthquake victims. One of the promises the government made before the May elections was for comprehensive rebuilding of the lost homes. The initial headline was that all would be rebuilt within a year. But, as The Guardian explains, that promise was soon rolled back to 319,000 homes within a year and a further 331,000 the following year. And by last week, the numbers had been reduced to 75,000 completed by the beginning of April, rising to 200,000 at the end of this year. Meanwhile, a spokesperson for the Turkish presidency said in late January that the construction of a total of 307,000 houses has started. The delivery of a total of 46,000 houses has started gradually. Of the 3 million people who have lost their homes, around 690,000 are in temporary camps made from shipping containers. Others are occupying tents or ad hoc shelters or using damaged buildings. The huge demand for rented homes has pushed up rents for everyone at a time when inflation generally has left families struggling for survival, and many earthquake survivors have also lost their source of livelihood. Alongside all the trauma of death and injuries, lost homes and broken communities, daily life remains very difficult. Many people had to leave their home region. But even in the worst hit province, Hatay, the government claims that 3/4 of the nearly 600,000 people who left have now returned. There are difficulties accessing health care and finding sufficient school teachers. Women have acquired more caring responsibilities, and in the cramped and ill-equipped temporary accommodation, and with households beset by economic and other worries, they are at increased risk of domestic abuse. A study of young children in Hatay has recorded serious food insecurity and instances of stunted growth. Uncertainty and lack of control over their future adds to the pressure on all the affected families. Large amounts of rubble and unsafe structures still remain, and there have been many problems with the clearance of collapsed buildings. Heavy metals and toxic chemicals have been allowed to pollute the land and groundwater, and people have been subjected to clouds of asbestos dust. Bodies were removed along with the rubble, and other bodies were buried without identification or the taking of DNA samples. There are also accounts of people disappearing after being seen alive. Many families do not know what has happened to their lost relations. They've no grave to grieve at, and every piece of news can bring new hope or renewed despair. There is no record of the number of people missing, and an opposition motion for an investigative commission for those missing was voted down by the ruling parties. In a heart-wrenching interview published by BNet, three Hatay residents described their quest to find evidence of the fate of their families in the face of authorities that accept their paperwork and then do nothing. Selahattin Kilinch explained, "We've searched the rubble three times. Not even a single bone was found. Where have our children gone? Isn't it possible to find a single bone in rubble that has been searched three times? We rescued 8 to 10 people from there. A white minibus came and took about 14 to 15 people. Where are the people who were taken to the hospitals? I mean, can people disappear in a hospital? But unfortunately, they do." He'd been told that DNA analysis for Hatay had been delayed. Suna Öztürk explained that volunteer miners had been prevented from entering the wreckage of the building where her daughter and grandchildren lived, and that the rubble had been removed without being properly searched. Quote, "They poured the wreckage of the Renaissance residence into a hidden place, and we found it too. I will go to the place where that wreckage is, and I will hold a press conference there. If we still don't get any response, I will continue searching. If nothing else, we'll go to Parliament and pour gasoline over ourselves. Find my child. I want even a fraction of them, even a strand of hair." End quote. Families of the missing have organised themselves into an association. Their Secretary General, Sema Gulec, is looking for her son. She explained to Yeni Uzgur Politica, "While I was looking for my son in Gulyuev apartment, it turned out that the last floor of the building he lived in had fallen on Merva apartment. Eyewitnesses said that my son was taken out alive. He was wrapped in a blanket, put in a white car and sent to the hospital. He had no visible injuries. He was just unconscious. We learnt about this 10 to 15 days later when eyewitnesses reached us on social media." She has been to hospitals, cemeteries and morgues, but there has been no DNA match. Others have similar stories. As with other disasters in neoliberal economies, the destruction has been exploited to give more opportunities for private profit. The Chamber of Engineers and Architects has pointed out the proposed mines and power plants that have been unable to obtain satisfactory environmental impact assessments before the earthquake were put into construction during the post-earthquake emergency when these assessments were not required. And they observe that a new law that makes it easier for the state to appropriate private property will be used to demolish valuable areas of the city to make them available for development. People living in areas designated under this law live in limbo, waiting for their homes to be bought from them. Top-down, profit-driven redevelopment does not make for good places to live, nor help to rebuild community structures. Often people are forced to stay far off from the city centres, and good agricultural land is buried under concrete. There is no input from local people, and tendering processes take place behind closed doors. For survivors who can afford to buy their new home, the government will provide a grant of 750,000 Turkish lira, 23,000 euros, and a loan of the same amount to be paid off in 20 years. People who previously owned their home may be unable to afford to buy or find themselves encumbered by debt. As predicted, despite the well-publicised arrests of some developers and contractors, public authorities and elected representatives have so far been left untouched. Human Rights Watch has drawn attention to Turkey's legal obligation to ensure that public officials are held accountable, pointing out that not a single public official, elected mayor or city council member has yet faced trial for their role in approving numerous construction projects that fell far short of safe building standards, or for failing to take measures to protect people living in buildings known to have structural problems in a region with a high risk of seismic activity. This puts Turkey in breach, yet again, of the European Convention on Human Rights, which requires that signatories have a regulatory framework to protect against foreseeable risk to life, and that that framework be enforced. Human Rights Watch notes that there's been a long-standing problem in Turkey's response to earthquakes, and that they were found culpable by the European Court of Human Rights for their failure to hold authorities accountable after the Marmara earthquake of 1999. The European Court has also repeatedly criticised Turkey's rule that prosecutions of public officials require prior permission from the relevant authorities. Although Human Rights Watch didn't mention it, responsibility goes right up to the top, with the granting of amnesties for buildings that did not comply with regulations. This has been done 9 times since 2002. The 2018 amnesty allowed buildings to be legalised merely on the declaration of their owners. Erdogan Agdodu of the Progressive Lawyers Association talked to Bionet about rottenness within the judicial system, commenting, "Can there be independent judiciary in an environment where the Minister of Justice expresses his views on every matter?" He noted that people close to the ruling Justice and Development Party, the AKP, were quickly released from detention, and he complained that collapsed buildings had not been properly investigated, giving us examples: lack of soil analysis and insufficient samples taken of the reinforcement. The BBC reported on the work done by one grieving mother and grandmother to find the reason for the collapse of the building that killed her family. "I tried to find as much evidence as I could at the place where I lost my child," she explained. "It shouldn't have been my responsibility, but it seems that had I not done it, we wouldn't have found anything." Her evidence was vital in showing alterations carried out in violation of building regulations, especially the conversion of the ground floor into a large open cafe. The designer of the cafe and the original engineer of the building now await trial, while elsewhere many claims have been closed due to insufficient evidence. The BBC observes that the local authorities are still to be questioned. Huge numbers of people died unnecessarily because the government was more concerned with preserving its political image than the lives of its citizens, and the lure of short-term gain, financial and political, ensures that the lessons from a year ago will not be acted on. Little has been done for Istanbul, which sits on a fault line that has a 2 in 3 chance of causing an even more devastating earthquake before the end of the decade. And the gruesome reminder of the dangers of seismic activity did not prevent President Erdogan from inaugurating the country's first nuclear power plant as part of his self-promotion before last May's election. Politically, Turkey is such a divided country that views on the government's response to the earthquake depend almost entirely on what party people support. Süddeutsche Zeitung reported that, quote, "The Ankara Institute, a Turkish think tank, has conducted an analysis of how Erdogan's supporters and opponents view his crisis management. 96% of opposition voters said it was bad, while 90% of his supporters were satisfied. That was also the case in the earthquake region." End quote. At the anniversary commemoration in Hatay's destroyed city of Antakya, the government's health minister was booed throughout his speech. And the CHP mayor, who has been renominated for the forthcoming local elections, was forced to leave the event with calls for his resignation. The pro-Kurdish leftist DEM Party and the Turkish Workers' Party held their own separate commemoration. With local elections coming up at the end of March, everything could be seen as an opportunity to win votes. On Sunday, 2 days before the anniversary, when President Erdogan visited Hatay to launch the mayoral campaign for the AKP, he made it quite clear to the suffering survivors why they should vote for him. Quote, "If the central and local administrations do not work hand in hand, if they are not in solidarity, nothing will come to the city. Has anything come to Hatay? At the moment, Hatay feels neglected and sad." End quote. The leader of the CHP, Özgür Özel, commented to journalists, "Is that a threat to earthquake victims?" And Erdogan's comment was firmly condemned by the co-chair of the DEM party. Bayonet journalists found local people saddened by these threatening words, but afraid to speak on camera. Bulent Danisoglu points out in Bayonet that Erdogan's words were a very deliberate statement by a man who has repeatedly made clear that he won't acknowledge any other administrator in the country besides himself. Last Sunday, the DEM party confirmed that they would be standing candidates right across the country, including in Istanbul, and putting forward their own political vision, not taking a tactical position for or against other parties. In the last local election, they, as the HDP, had not stood candidates in the western cities and had advised their supporters to vote tactically for the CHP to defeat the AKP. The CHP mayors of Istanbul and Ankara gained their positions on the Kurdish vote, but did nothing to acknowledge this or to make life easier for their Kurdish supporters. As the Green left, the DEM party supported the CHP's Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu for president, only to discover afterwards that he'd made a secret deal with the anti-Kurdish fascist Ümit Özdağ. As the DEM party spokesman said, referencing the pun on the party's name, which means time in Kurdish, "Now DEM has come for Istanbul." The full list of DEM mayoral candidates was announced yesterday after a process of primary elections and public meetings designed to strengthen party democracy. As Turkey gears up for their own local elections, it seems that they have failed in their attempt to influence coalition negotiations following the local elections in Kirkuk across the Iraqi border. They'd hoped to engineer the exclusion of the Patriotic Union of Kurdistan, the PUK, but last Sunday the PUK reached an agreement with the Kurdistan Democratic Party, the KDP, to work together to ensure the choice of a Kurdish governor for the province. At the same time, Turkey has been reinforcing their links with the KDP, but threatening further action against the PUK, which they accuse of working with organisations that Turkey equates with the PKK. These organisations include the Syrian Democratic Forces, the SDF, alongside whom PUK Peshmerga have been combating the threat of ISIS sleeper cells. A Turkish military delegation led by the defence minister has had meetings with leaders in Baghdad and Erbil, generating speculation over plans for further military operations. Jabar Yawar, a former secretary of the Peshmerga ministry in the Kurdistan region of Iraq, told Voice of America, quote, "Turkey plans to launch a major operation against PKK forces inside Turkey, the Kurdistan region, Kandil, and the Sinjar areas of Mosul in the spring. They want Iraq and the Kurdistan region to help them and to participate in the operation. All the meetings with the parties are aimed at convincing them to participate in the fighting and the operations against the PKK. They, Turkey, want their troops to be protected. They're trying to use the Peshmerga for the fighting. They've not been able to destroy the PKK guerrillas." End quote. This plan has been denied by the spokesperson of the Kurdistan Regional Government. in the democratic autonomous administration of North and East Syria, too, fears of further fighting intensified as the United States retaliated for the drone strike by a pro-Iranian militia that killed three US servicemen in Jordan on the 28th of January. On the 2nd of February, American bombs targeted 85 sites in Iraq and Syria, killing at least 16 people, including civilians. On the night of the 4th to the 5th of February, a militia drone fired from an area controlled by the Syrian government hit the training academy in the US base at Al-Omar oil field east of Deir ez-Zor. No Americans were hurt, but six SDF soldiers were killed. 3 nights later, the United States carried out a targeted assassination that killed a leader of the group widely believed to have carried out the Jordan attack. What happens next depends not only on the forces in Syria, but on developments in Gaza, which have made the United States such a prominent and hated target. This coming week sees another important anniversary. On Thursday, it will be a quarter of a century since Abdullah Öcalan was abducted in an international plot led by the CIA and imprisoned in Turkey. The anniversary is being marked by long marches and conferences, all calling for Öcalan's freedom. In Turkey, the Great Freedom March for the freedom of Abdullah Öcalan and a democratic solution to the Kurdish question has been traversing the snowy countryside to be given enthusiastic receptions in different Kurdish cities. And so the struggle goes on, raising its voice in an attempt to be heard above the tumult of today's world politics.